from deep inside your radio.
From Chicago, Illinois, ladies and gentlemen, from this is so such a treat. It's such a rare treat to be broadcasting from a radio station where the program is actually carried. And I'm just down the hall from a very sinister-sounding facility called the Terminal Room. Man, I don't want to go in there. I've knocked off most of the Los Angeles dog trainer corrections by your request, ladies and gentlemen, but here's one I just couldn't pass up. From the Los Angeles dog trainer, quote, a listing in Sunday Calendar said hot dogs would not be allowed at the Scandinavian Autumn Fest on September 17th in Agoura. In fact, no canines will be allowed at the event. So, it's not hot dogs, it's dogs. It's the Los Angeles dog trainer for your listening pleasure, ladies and gentlemen. The Australian press has been reporting that the Brits are fixing to relax their new strict rules about what can be carried aboard airplanes. This, of course, these rules were put in place in the wake of the announcement of an alleged plot. All the British news media are now calling it an alleged plot, ladies and gentlemen, to carry liquids, pastes, aerosols, gels, some sort of something on board and concoct an explosive in the bathroom of the plane was the way the alleged plot was allegedly explained by Britain's alleged interior minister. And one of the things they did was introduce a rule regarding the size of the one carry-on bag they were allowing without ever explaining what that had to do with the plot, the alleged plot. Why, if you carried on a smaller bag, that would make it easier for them to foil the alleged plot, giving rise to some skepticism that basically they just wanted smaller bags to examine because it was easier on the x-ray machine guys. Oh, there's only three things in there. Anyway, as I say, the Australian press is reporting that the Brits are preparing to relax those stringent regulations and might allow musicians to carry their instruments on board again, which would be good because at least one orchestra has already canceled its tour of London or England as a result of the restrictions. But let's get down to basics, ladies and gentlemen. If the alleged plot, if the scenario of the alleged plot was for people to bring chemicals on board, separate, benign chemicals on board an aircraft, and to go into the bathroom and to mix those benign chemicals and form an explosive substance as a result of the combination in the airport bathroom, then it seems to me that you're chasing after the symptom by banning liquids, gels, and aerosols from being brought on an aircraft. What you need to do, ladies and gentlemen, and here comes a bright idea, is to ban passengers from using the bathroom. And just as you go through security, give each of them a diaper. That'll make for more fun flying all around, and you can drink nonstop. You're welcome. Hello, welcome to the show. Diapers for safety.
And I've run out of pale ale, and I feel like I'm in jail, and my music bores me once again. And I've been on the pinball, and I no longer know it all, and they say that you never know when you're insane. Got fleas in the bedroom, got flies in the bathroom, and the cat just finished off the bread. So I walk over Soho, and I read about Monroe, and I wonder was she really what they said. Got a call from a good friend, come on down for the weekend. Didn't know if I could spare the time.
one who was crazy about a boy who was lazy, but it didn't work out cause they just couldn't make it rhyme. Hey Jude, you were alright, I could have grooved with you all night, but you turned your back on the part again.
From Chicago, ladies and gentlemen, from that other, whatever coast this is, I'm Harry Shearer welcoming you to this edition of the show, and it might actually be time for a copyrighted feature from this, copyrighted feature of this broadcast. I'll get my prepositions right. Stand by. It's the Apologies of the Week, don't you know?
We're so sorry.
Some good ones. Of course, the one that everybody knows about is Il Papa. Pope Benedict said on Sunday he's deeply sorry for the anger caused by his remarks on Islam and said a quote he used from a medieval text about holy wars did not reflect his personal thoughts. Two West Bank churches were set afire early Sunday as a wave of Muslim anger over the comments grew throughout the Muslim world. Speaking to pilgrims at his summer residence... Hey, it's a little late for being at your summer residence, isn't it? You're the Pope. You can be there. The Pope said he was deeply sorry for the reactions in some countries to a few passages of my address at the University of Regensburg, which were considered offensive to the sensibility of Muslims. These, in fact, were a quotation from a medieval text, which do not in any way express my personal thought. I hope this serves to appease hearts. Call for appeasement? Heart appeasement. I think that's the good kind of appeasement. Dateline San Antonio, under a page one headline, Never Forgotten, the San Antonio Express News announced its 9/11 coverage this week and then forgot three of the four 9/11 victims with ties to San Antonio. Quote, there is no excuse for the inexcusable, said the paper, and there's no forgetting the not forgettable. They didn't say that. We apologize to our readers for the oversight, especially to the families and friends. This was a serious error of omission that will force us to re-examine some of our reporting and editing procedures, said managing editor Brett Thacker. Representative Bob Ney of Ohio pleaded guilty to two criminal charges in the Jack Abramoff congressional corruption probe this week. Ney had accepted trips worth more than $170,000. I guess he was saying I when he should have been saying nay. Sorry about that, ladies and gentlemen. I'm in Chicago. In his written statement, Ney said he had made serious mistakes and I'm sorry for them. I am very sorry for the pain I've caused to my family, my constituents, and my colleagues, unquote. The statement did not say whether he intended to serve out the remainder of his term. Oh, he also said he recently realized, quote, a dependence on alcohol had been a problem for me. I am not making any excuses and I take full responsibility for my actions. Over the years, I have worked to help others. Now I am the one that needs help. I'm seeking professional help for my problem. Alcohol made him take bribes, ladies and gentlemen. It's that's not a side effect listed on the label. I'm pretty sure. Dateline Wichita, Kansas. A top official of U.S. Department of Agriculture's Farm Service Agency apologized this week to Kansas cattlemen for a miscalculation that will mean almost $4 million fewer dollars. I'm in Chicago. What do you expect? For a livestock drought assistance program that the state had been promised. John Johnson said the error was discovered when officials realized they'd used data that included the numbers of feedlot cattle for Kansas, Wyoming, and Arizona. Yeah, anyway, numbers. It's just numbers. The New Hampshire State Ports Director won reappointment this week despite acknowledging using a racist term that refers to someone of Middle Eastern descent. Why is it descent? Why wouldn't it be ascent? I don't know. He apologized for that remark, but denied allegations that he hurled other slurs in the workplace. Hurled other slurs in the workplace. That's good writing, Associated Press. Three errs and a... Gino Marconi agreed to take diversity training. Somebody's going to do a TV show that takes place in diversity training, ladies and gentlemen, and it will be a good comedy. And he apologized to the executive council, which confirmed him unanimously for another five-year term as state ports director. Previously, a longshoreman had accused Marconi of using the Middle Eastern slur in talking about a Captain A in front of his staff and stevedores at the port of Portsmouth. The men told investigators from the state attorney general's office that Marconi also referred to Captain A with other racist slurs and referred to someone else with slurs aimed at Jews and Asians. So he doesn't care who and what. And Dateline London, Hackney Council has won a payment of approximately, $500,000 from Nike after the sportswear giant used the East London Borough's logo across a range of clothing. The figure is a royalty on global sales figures, sneakers, footballs, and T-shirts. Nike has apologized and has also agreed to pay Hackney Borough's legal costs as part of the agreement. The controversy arose in May this year when the range of clothing featuring the distinctive Hackney H symbol. Are we familiar with that? Surrounded by the words, the London Borough of Hackney, and the Nike swoosh first appeared. Nike is famously protective regarding the use of its own trademarks and had used the Hackney logo without permission. And finally, did I say "and finally" before? Well, now I mean it. Another Catholic apology. Representatives for the Archdiocese of New Orleans, following up on a news conference last week, insisted that the Louisiana Recovery Authority, which is parceling out money for homeowners to rebuild in the flood-devastated areas of New Orleans and Louisiana, that the authority direct $20 million to parochial and other non-public schools in New Orleans to cover the cost of matching 10% of FEMA money for repairs. The Archdiocese delegation got a tongue-lashing from Louisiana Recovery Authority members, several of whom are Catholic, rebutting a report last week by the school superintendent and insisting that there was no reason for news conferences. They were particularly taken aback, here comes the apology, by a letter sent to members of the authority by William Donahue of the National Catholic League, which said, quote, as president of the nation's largest civil rights organization, I take very seriously any action or implication of anti-Catholicism. While the nature of bigotry is unacceptable on its own merits, it is particularly disturbing when the source lies in the public sector, unquote, Bill Donahue. You've seen him on cable TV. He's pugnacious. Quote, that's as low a blow as could be sent to any of us at this table, said the chairman of the Louisiana Recovery Authority, Norman Francis, president of Catholic University Xavier. That did offend, he said. At the close of the discussion, Louisiana Catholic Conference executive director Donnie Lohr was contrite, saying advocates for the schools had mistakenly thought they had little time to make their case. I'm sorry if we offended you, he said. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Good, some good intelligence. Always, it's never too late for good intel. In a secret briefing, this is from MSNBC.com, but it might have escaped your attention. So I present it to you for your listening pleasure. In a secret briefing prepared for delivery to White House officials, including Scooter Libby and Stephen Hadley, who was then National Security Director, in September 2002, a secret briefing prepared for them. Officials working for Doug Feith, then the head of the Pentagon's Policy Development Branch, that was the Pentagon's own little intelligence outfit, included a special slide, ladies and gentlemen, about the purported meeting between Mohammed Atta, one of the 9/11 hijackers, and Czech intelligence officials. This is the meeting that Dick Cheney keeps insisting hasn't been confirmed yet. Well, neither has the Earth smashing into the moon. That hasn't been confirmed yet either, meaning it didn't happen. But this was always elicited as evidence of ties between Saddam Hussein and the 9/11 hijackers. All right, so Doug Feith's office prepares a special slide about that purported meeting, including an allegation that, quote, several workers at Prague Airport identified Atta following 9/11 and remember him traveling with his brother Farhan, unquote. Earlier versions of the same briefing were presented to CIA officials and Donald Rumsfeld. The Prague slide was not included, possibly for this reason. Several former intelligence officials who worked directly on investigations of Saddam's alleged al-Qaeda ties said they had never heard of the allegation about Atta's brother, even though defense officials in Feith's office claimed this had been reported through normal intelligence channels. In addition, in a new book just out, Michael Isikoff and David Korn report that Atta had two sisters. And no brother. Ladies and gentlemen, always useful to have good intelligence. And now, news of bad entertainment. Actually, bad show business. It's from the Washington Post. Gary Becher, a pilot and president of the Coalition for Airline Pilots Association, a trade group that closely tracks security issues, says he constantly sees people drinking from illicit bottles of water or putting on lip gloss when he walks through the passenger cabin of the planes he's flying. Most of the time, he said, it doesn't bother him. Quote, they're just doing their routines like they always did. An old woman drinking a bottle of water doesn't concern me. Okay, now we get to one of the moments where truth somehow sneaks out, ladies and gentlemen. He continues. This is the president, a pilot and a president of a trade group closely tracking security issues. The whole screening process is a facade to make the public feel safe, to show that the government is doing something. Now, you buy your ticket, you might as well get some entertainment. News of bad entertainment, ladies and gentlemen. Not yet copyrighted, but you never know.
My baby, she's so uptown. My baby, she's so uptown. My baby, she's so uptown. She's hometown with a knife-born gang, hanging out with that city mob, but deep down, baby, she's so uptown. My baby's got me riding the bus. Only thinks about the two of us. Down there at the Bluebird, face down in the wave. Why she can't come by me? I'm down in charges with the family, looking for a reason why can't she come around. The only thing I found is deep down, baby, she's so uptown. Like a fairy tale. Now she's back on my hands. I love to watch her dance by the jukebox, jukebox. She's my piece of the sky. Loves to see me cry in my ginger ale. My baby, she's so uptown. My baby, she's so uptown. My baby, she's so uptown. She run around with the Ninth Ward gang, hanging out with the fat city mob, but deep down, my baby, she's so uptown. 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 My baby, so uptown.
Ladies and gentlemen, there's new news about genetically modified food, specifically rice. No genetically modified food is allowed to go on sale in Britain or in any other European country. Last month, the Bush administration, is that our president? Did I miss something? The Bush administration admitted it had found a modified material which had not received safety clearance in the United States in long grain rice intended for export. The unauthorized rice. How sad is that? Unauthorized rice. People are starving. Was developed by Bayer, yes, the aspirin people. They're helping all over the place to tolerate weed killer. That's what you need rice to do, ladies and gentlemen. Weed killer tolerant rice. Give me some. Make me up some. And was tested on United States farms between 1998 and 2001. The company decided not to market it. Why would that be? It wasn't tolerant enough to weed killer? Or too tolerant? See what I'm saying? Anyway, it has turned up widely in U.S. rice. Did you know this? I think we've had some reports about it here, but this is in a British newspaper called The Independent. Possibly, they say, because pollen from the tested rice spread to conventional rice. The European Commission now says that the tainted rice has been found in 33 of 162 samples of rice imported from the United States. So, the Europe's last month banned any further imports of rice from the United States. This GM stuff is good for the economy, isn't it? I don't mean General Motors. They got their own problems. Unless they could be proved, the imports, to be clear of the GM rice, and instructed governments to test products already on the market to make sure they didn't contain it. The European Health and Consumer Protection Commissioner said it should not be allowed to enter the food chain under any circumstances. That sounds very tolerant of weed killer. Two big Swiss supermarket chains have already banned all U.S. long grain rice from being sold. And the British Food Standards Agency announced that the presence of this material in rice on sale in the U.K. is illegal. Aside from that, this is Lincoln. How did you enjoy the rice? Nice people doing nice things. Oh, diversity training, ladies and gentlemen. I have a moment. Maybe I'll tell you this story. Because this could be the pilot episode of the sitcom about diversity training. My wife and I were on tour doing a show in Atlanta last year. And, you know, when you do that stuff, you have to go into the radio stations and visit with the morning crews. Nice people doing nice things. And so there was this bunch of, you know, morning show bozos. And I mean that in the best, you know, I like bozo. Doing their thing, but in a very sour, bitter mood. And they're doing their usual, you know, cracking jokes about black people and Asian people and Middle Eastern people and, you know, what morning show people do. And when they went into a commercial break, we asked, well, why are you guys so sour and bitter this morning? Well, at 9:30 when we get off the air, we have to go to diversity training. So their act, just to reiterate, is making fun of people. And they have to go to diversity training where they learn not to make fun of people so they can go back and do their act making fun of people again. Because Clear Channel can say, hey, we trained them. Dateline Washington. Iraq's political process has sharpened the country's sectarian divisions, polarized relations between its ethnic and religious groups, and weakened its sense of national identity. This from the U.S. Government Accountability Office. Yeah, we do have government accountability. I bet you didn't hear about it. It's from McClatchy Newspapers reported it. In spite of a sharp... Okay, the report was unusual in its sweep, relying on a series of other government studies, some of them previously unpublished. The GAO report was downbeat in its conclusions, underscoring how Iraq's deteriorating security situation threatens the goal of a stable and democratic regime. Quote, despite coalition efforts and the efforts of newly formed Iraqi government, insurgents continue to demonstrate the ability to recruit new fighters and supply themselves and attack coalition forces. The report calls on findings made by the U.S. State and Defense Departments, U.S. intelligence agencies, but the GAO, unlike them, has no responsibility for forming or executing the policy. Citing the Pentagon, the report says enemy attacks against coalition and Iraqi forces increased by 23% from 2004 to 2005, and the number of attacks from January to July this year were 57% higher than during the same period in 2005. That's good metrics, but you can only fool with the numbers you have. A graph showed that the number of attacks rose from around 100 in May 2003 to 4,500 in July 2006. More than half were against coalition troops. The rest are attacks on Iraqi security forces or attacks on civilians. Electricity? That would be a good thing. Electricity production remains inadequate. Baghdad residents receive less than 6 hours of power a day. Outside Baghdad, they receive less than 11 hours a day. The report cites a Defense Intelligence Agency finding that last December's elections, quote, appeared to heighten sectarian tensions and polarize divides. That finding was echoed in a March report of this year from the government-funded U.S. Institute for Peace. I bet they're getting a lot of funding. The report said the political process had sharpened ethnic and sectarian identities, while nationalism and a sense of Iraqi identity have weakened, unquote. And a report from the Director of National Intelligence, John Negroponte, in February of this year, said Iraqi security forces, quote, are experiencing difficulty in managing ethnic and sectarian divisions. Many Iraqi troops remain loyal to sectarian and political interests, according to the General Accounting Office. Also, the American military, talking about the numbers game in Iraq, the American military did not count in its dramatic drop, reporting of a dramatic drop in the number of murders in the Baghdad area last month. It did not count people killed by bombs, mortars, rockets, or other mass attacks, including suicide bombings. Aside from that, Mrs. Lincoln, the murder rate went down. The decision was to include only victims of drive-by shootings and those killed by torture and execution, usually at the hands of death squads. So U.S. officials could argue that a security crackdown that began in August had more than halved the city's murder rate because they weren't counting people killed by bombs, mortars, rockets, or other mass attacks. The types of slayings excluded were not made explicit at the time. That led to confusion after the Iraqi Health Ministry figures, which I think I repeated on this broadcast, showed that 1,500 people died violently in August, nearly the same number as in July. Good people, working hard, making progress. You know that UN inspector is investigating. Now, it was about a year ago on this broadcast when I noted that the noise about Iran was eerily similar, almost reassuringly similar in a goofy way, to the noise about Iraq in the run-up to the Iraq War, including the disputes between the United States and the International Atomic Energy Agency, which happened to have been right about Iraq. So inspectors for that agency were investigating Iran's nuclear program, now angrily complained to the Bush administration and to a Republican congressman about a House committee report on Iran's nuclear capabilities, calling parts of the document outrageous and dishonest, and offering evidence to refute the central claims of that report. Officials of the IAEA said the report contained some erroneous, misleading, and unsubstantiated statements. The Bush administration even tried to remove the head of the IAEA when he didn't agree with them about Iraq. The committee asserts that Iran is producing weapons-grade uranium in the town of Natanz. The IAEA called that incorrect, noting that weapons-grade uranium is enriched to a level of 90% or more. Iran has enriched uranium so far to 3.5%. That's close. It's got a percent in it. When the congressional report was released last month, House Intelligence Committee head Peter Hoekstra said his intent was, quote, to help increase the American public's understanding of Iran as a threat, a specific kind of understanding. This is like pre-war Iraq all over again, says David Albright, a former nuclear inspector. You have an Iranian nuclear threat, he says, that is spun up using bad information that's cherry-picked and a report that trashes the inspectors, unquote. The committee's report was written by a single Republican staffer who has a position of taking a hard line on Iraq, and he chastised the CIA and other agencies for not providing evidence to back up assertions that Iran is producing nuclear weapons. You know, the first time it comes around, it's scary. The second time, it's just more entertainment. And now, ladies and gentlemen, yes, it's a copyrighted feature. News of the warm.
Soft, listen to the warm. We can listen to the warm.
NASA this week announced a study of the effects of shrinking Arctic ice formation on polar bears. A paper to be published in the journal Arctic. Oh, they canceled my subscription. I wonder why. Found a marked decrease in the time that polar bears can spend on sea ice, their preferred platform for hunting seals and other sea mammals. As the ice melts, the animals have been forced to spend more time on land, resulting in more encounters with people and a decline in the bear's average body weight. The average weight of adult female polar bears was 650 pounds 25 years ago. Their average weight 2 years ago was 507 pounds, a drop of 143 pounds. The Antarctic experienced a sharp decline in ice cover during the 1970s, but recovered. This report says there are no signs that the Arctic will now recover its ice in the same way. But to me, ladies and gentlemen, the good news is the polar bear diet.
There was someone I loved. living and dying each and every day. I'm not the same girl I once was, and clearly some things remain, and I worship the memories of sweetness and pain. So I worship those days.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, news from outside the bubble. It's bubblicious this week. More than 2 tons of radioactive material stored in a rundown research facility is an easy target for terrorists seeking to build a dirty bomb, according to the United Nations nuclear watchdog that we knock when we choose to. Where would that facility be? In Iran? In Iraq? in Serbia. Nuclear inspectors have branded the lightly guarded storehouse of highly enriched uranium from a communist-era reactor which closed 22 years ago the world's most dangerous disused nuclear site because of the potency of the material present and because some is prone to leaking. The staff at the site are highly professional and very cooperative, said Michael Durst of the IAEA. But the budgets of the whole country are very limited. They're keeping the whole thing together with gum and tape. It's better than gum by itself, I guess. President Bush, according to The Independent in London, is preparing an astonishing U-turn on global warming. After years of trying to ignore agreements to tackle climate change, he's drawing up plans to control emissions of carbon dioxide and rapidly boost the use of renewable energy sources. Administration insiders privately refer to the moment as Bush's Nixon goes to China moment. The rethink follows increasing pressure on the White House from Republican governors, including Arnold Schwarzenegger, and the mayors of more than 300 cities, business leaders, and Congress. But Ian Murray, a senior fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute, the chief climate change cheerleader of the present Bush policy, is deeply alarmed. Quote, "We are left with the unpleasant conclusion that the only motivation is political," unquote. Oh, God, no. From The Guardian, a video message last weekend by Adam Gadan, a 28-year-old American al-Qaeda convert, urging U.S. soldiers to embrace Islam, passed off largely unnoticed, but it could have ominous significance. After 9/11, Islamic scholars criticized Osama bin Laden for failing to follow the Quran's teaching that enemies should be offered a chance to convert before an attack. Now that obligation has been fulfilled, according to Michael Scheuer, a CIA retiree who used to run the search for bin Laden, the tape was directed at Muslims to show that al-Qaeda has gone the extra mile to get us off the hook, he says. It's a mug's game to guess when, but I wouldn't be surprised to see another attack in the United States before the end of this year, unquote Michael Scheuer in The Guardian. Also in The Guardian, where's Osama? He enjoys an ideal sanctuary. The Pashtun tribal belt is a broad swath of high-walled villages, sprawling orchard, and fiercely conservative tribesmen that straddles the Pakistani-Afghan border. The strict Pashtun code of honor dictates all guests must be treated to warm hospitality no matter who they are. But the tribal belt can also be a tough place to keep a secret, which leads many to believe, according to The Guardian, that bin Laden has a powerful protector. Quote, "It seems that someone very important has given him refuge," says one official. "Someone we don't suspect and someone the Americans don't suspect." Unquote. That may help explain why America's $25 million bounty advertised on Pakistani television and on cheap State Department matchbook boxes bearing Osama's picture, why that bounty remained untouched. Assumptions that Pashtun tribesmen would trade his loyalty against a fistful of dollars have proved misplaced. I'm quoting a U.S. official in Pakistan. "Everyone thought they were feckless, that they would sell him for the money. It hasn't happened. These people are direct and forthright. They can't be bought," unquote. More. Pakistan's credibility as a leading ally in the war on terrorism was called into question this weekend when it emerged that Pakistan President Pervez Musharraf's government has authorized the release from jail of thousands of Taliban fighters caught fighting against coalition forces in Afghanistan. This is from The Telegraph in London. United States officials have been horrified to discover that thousands of foreign fighters detained by Pakistan after fleeing the battleground have been quietly released and allowed to return to their home countries. The mass release of the prisoners has provoked a stern rebuke to the Musharraf regime from the American government. Our allies, ladies and gentlemen, our friends in Pakistan. The European Union has condemned the detention of terrorism suspects by the United States in secret overseas prisons, whose existence President Bush first announced last week. Those Europeans, they don't like the secret prison. What's wrong with them? They're so European. And now there's this debate about how to fight the war on terror. From the Glasgow Sunday Herald, the only theater of the war on terrorism where terrorists are in retreat is Indonesia, the only nation which has come close to beating its own jihadis. It has done so with a radically different strategy from the one pursued by the United States. The Jakarta government is an emerging democracy. The Indonesians, facing criticism from the U.S. and Australia, they'd allowed terrorism to fester, ignored much of the unsolicited Western advice to crack down hard. Instead, the sympathizers and hangers-on were allowed to rant and rave in the streets while the danger men were methodically tracked down by security forces. Around 30 key Jamal Islamiyah militants have been arrested and tried. Three Bali bombers are on death row. Instead of detainees disappearing into detention centers, the police put one of the key bombers on TV where he laughed and boasted. Skeptical Indonesians could see the suspects had not been framed or coerced, and much of JI's support has melted away. That's one way of doing it, ladies and gentlemen, in Indonesia. News from outside the bubble. As I say, there's now this debate spurred by the president, who had a press conference this week, and the announced the text of the press conference this way.
This debate is occurring because of the Supreme Court's ruling that said that we must conduct ourselves under the common Article 3 of the Geneva Convention. And that common Article 3 says that, you know, there will be no outrages upon human dignity. It's very vague. What does that mean? Outrages upon human.
Yeah, what does that mean, outrages upon human dignity? Makes you wonder, doesn't it? What could that possibly mean? Of course, in a country that has more reality TV on it every day, that would be a good question to ask, whether in fact we know what an outrage on human dignity consists of these days. But the while the Bush press conference got a lot of attention on the Sunday morning talk shows, the, to me, most salient part of it did not. Here are excerpts from Bush's Friday press conference. Just see if you can notice the common thread that's running through it.
What I'm proposing is that there be clarity in the law so that our professionals will have no doubt that that which they're doing is legal. And so the piece of legislation I sent up there provides our professionals that which is needed to go forward. Now, the court said that you've got to live under Article 3 of the Geneva Convention, and the standards are so vague that our professionals won't be able to carry forward the program. It provides more clarity for our professionals. And that's what these people expect. These are decent citizens. And what I'm concerned about is if we don't do that, then it's very conceivable our professionals could be held to account based upon court decisions in other countries. I've spent a lot of time on this issue, as you can imagine. And I've talked to professionals. They're not going forward with the program. Their professionals will not step up unless there's clarity in the law. That's why I asked Congress to pass legislation so that our professionals can go forward doing the duty we expect them to do. If our professionals don't have clear standards in the law, the program is not going to go forward. You can't ask a young professional on the front line of protecting this country to violate law. And I have the obligation to make sure that our professionals, who I would ask to go conduct interrogations to find out what might be happening or who might be coming to this country, I got to give them the tools they need, and that is clear law. The point is that the program is not going to go forward if our professionals do not have clarity in the law. And the best way to provide clarity in the law is to make sure the Detainee Treatment Act is the crux.
Well, okay, so what's the common thread there, ladies and gentlemen? The introduction of a new branding element. You know, this administration is very branding conscious. The professionals, a phrase that has never appeared before. Now, of course, when President Bush said that the treatment of enemy combatants should be consistent with the Geneva Conventions, that wasn't vague. But now, it's, you know, the actual Geneva Conventions are too vague. But the professionals, this is a new branding element. Maybe it's just introducing something we'll be seeing this season.
Professionalism has a new name. This fall, professionalism has a new name. The Professionals. Two men, one woman, on the front lines of the dark side. Don Johnson is the veteran operative.
I think we need some alternative procedures.
Ice Trey is the streetwise rookie.
Waterboarding, stress positions, dogs. It sounds like torture to me. Let's do it.
Brittany Street is the improbably attractive woman.
Wait a minute. Aren't we going over the line?
Excuse me, Missy. But isn't that what we're here for?
Who you calling Missy?
Amateurism was never like this. Tuesdays this fall, or maybe Thursdays if Tuesdays are too tough. The thin blue line has just gotten a lot thinner.
Do we just leave him in there, cold and screaming?
Yeah. I think it's our lunch break.
If they didn't do it for the money, they wouldn't be the professionals. This fall on television, the internet, and your mobile phone. Just like the enemy, you can't escape the professionals.
I could show the world how to smile. I could be glad all of the while. I could change the gray skies to blue if I had you. I could leave the old days behind, leave all my pals, I'd never mind. I could start my life anew if I had you. I could climb a snow-capped mountain, sail the mighty ocean wide. I could cross the burning desert if I had you by my side. I could be a king, dear, uncrowned, humble or poor, rich or renowned. There is nothing I couldn't do if I had you. Climb a snow-capped mountain, sail the mighty ocean wide. I could cross the burning desert if I had you by my side. I could be a king uncrowned, humble or poor, rich or renowned. There is nothing I couldn't do if I had you. Baby, if I had you.
The program can't continue if the law isn't clear. Although the program can't be clear because it might not be lawful. The procedures can be awful. Loud rock and a stone-cold waffle. Just as long as they aren't vague. Forget The Hague. If you think our judges stink, the foreign ones are worse. Don't call the nurse. Don't call the hearse. Don't play the recessionals. These are the professionals.
Professionals. Professionals. Professionals. Professionals. Professionals. Professionals. The professionals. 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 Professionals.
We never torture. So torture can't be what we're doing. If it's been illegal up to now, just stop the poo-pooing and make it legal. Why do you hate the eagle? What makes you so confused? John, you've been tortured, but the only thing we're torturing is reason. Colin, you've commanded legions in the regions next to Baghdad way back when. But you tortured the truth at the UN. If we're the good guys, what we do can't be bad. A new kind of war calls for a new kind of confessionals. Just ask the professionals.
Professionals, professionals, professionals. 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 Professionals.
Some say we should be nicer, seek rapport. If it's intelligence we're after, maybe we should use some. But the world is gruesome, and this isn't about rapport. It's about the rapture. If you're captured on the battlefield, we'll make you yield with alternative methods. It might be alternatively painful to walk. We have ways of making you talk. It used to be a Nazi joke, but now it's our only hope. Coping with a new kind of villain. They don't fear killing. They welcome death. We have to give them something harsher. So that's got not to be a crime. It's not the time for amateurs. The accent's on neo-connoisseurs. You'll need divine intercessionals after we've dealt with the congressionals. And you've seen the professionals.
Professionals. Professionals. Professionals. Professionals. Professionals. Professionals. Professionals. Professionals. Professionals. Professionals. Professionals. Professionals.
Just one more thing, ladies and gentlemen, on the subject of the digital wonderland. Europe's cable operators are giving away set-top boxes to help boost the adoption of digital television. But plugging in a free cable set-top box starts an electricity bill which can easily top $75 a year because it's got a hard drive and you can't turn it off. But who's counting? Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week. Oh, I want to thank the people at the Midwest Literary Festival in Aurora who brought me here to Chicagoland for inviting me to come speak about my new book, Not Enough Indians. Hey, you know, you can pre-order it at Amazon, or you can go wait for it to be at your neighborhood bookstore in a couple weeks and then go buy it, or you can ignore it totally. It's a free country for a while. Anyway, the show returns next week at the same time over these same stations, and I'll try to put any literary festival appearances, books, signings that I'm doing on the website, but maybe I'll forget. So look them up yourself. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. A tip of the Le Show chapeau to the San Diego, Chicago, and Pittsburgh desks, and to Harold Britton here at WBEZ Chicago for helping with today's broadcast. Thanks to Pam Halstead, as always. The show playlist available at harryshear.com. Looking forward to those diapers, especially in first class. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. So long from Chicago. Good day.